How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. We have a ton of stuff to talk about today. We have 2 weeks worth of news. Last week, I headed down to Vegas for the UFC 146 all-heavyweight show. Junior Dos Santos knocking out Frank Mir in the second round, as virtually everybody on the face of the earth expected. And Cain Velasquez mauling Bigfoot Silva to set up a rematch of their first bout from UFC on Fox 1. On the way back, my flight schedule did not allow me to do the program, so this week we're going to talk about 2 weeks worth of news, and there is plenty of it. The Ultimate Fighter finale was last night. We're going to talk about that show, Michael Chiesa, and storybook ending, as Dana White called it. He won the entire season. I believe he may have been an underdog in every single fight. He was the fella whose father passed away shortly after the season began, and it was the only real storyline of the entire season. And hate to call it a storyline, the fact that the man's father passed away, but it's reality TV, and they made a story out of it, and he ended up going all the way, and in a big upset in the finals, beat Ally Quinta to win the Tough Championship. Now signed to a six-fight deal, six-figure contract. We'll talk about that show, plus UFC 146, bunches of thoughts on that event, and wrestling news. A lot of suspensions. In fact, every opponent that CM Punk has faced at WrestleMania over the last 3 years is currently suspended. Two of the big ones, Randy Orton, is out of action. He will be gone until 2 weeks before SummerSlam as a result of his second wellness policy violation. And Chris Jericho has been suspended for 30 days for defacing the Brazilian flag. We'll talk about that. Plus, the biggest story backstage UFC 146 was the arrest of Ariane Celeste. We'll tell you what happened there. Some horrible ratings to get into. More of the John Cena divorce. Was it really caused by home remodeling? We're going to talk about that and more. All of that today on Wrestling Observer Live. Back in just a moment. Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 2 hours, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Lots of stuff to talk about today. We're going to start with the Randy Orton suspension. Randy Orton, who was arguably the number two star in WWE, arguably in the sense that some would argue that, in fact, CM Punk is the number two star. John Cena, of course, being number one. He has been suspended for 60 days, a violation of WWE's wellness policy. He was, actually, the word came down a little while before he was suspended. I don't know how long, but I do know that early last week, they moved John Cena over to the SmackDown house shows, or I think it's TV tapings, actually, dark match on the TV tapings. Part of the reason for that was, in fact, because Randy Orton was going to be gone. Their number one draw on SmackDown, gone. So he was suspended when he was to ensure that he would be back 2 weeks before SummerSlam. So at this point, I believe they are planning on having him do a match on that show. That was the timing of the suspension. So he has been pulled from the pay-per-view, the WWE pay-per-view, which is coming up in 2 weeks, which is fine, because his opponent, Chris Jericho, also was pulled from that show after he allegedly defaced a Brazilian flag. He actually threw it on the ground, stomped on it, and threw it out of the ring. And that is, in fact, a misdemeanor crime. And thus, he was told, you can either leave Brazil or you're going to spend the night in the clink. And so he left Brazil. So Chris Jericho gone, Randy Orton gone. Dolph Ziggler was scheduled to face Randy Orton at the show. And after Orton was, after Jericho was pulled, let me think about this. It was originally supposed to be Orton versus Jericho. Jericho got pulled, so they started booking Dolph Ziggler so that he would take the spot against Randy Orton. And then Randy Orton got pulled, so Dolph Ziggler is out of luck at this point. And we'll see if they continue the breakup of Swagger and Ziggler tomorrow on Raw, or if they're just back together again like nothing ever happened because both guys are gone. So, first off, Mike, let's start with your thoughts on Jericho and the flag incident.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not as dismissive of it as most people have been, most North Americans have been, as far as the fact that it's, you know, it's not really a big deal here, but I'm not going to be too dismissive of it because I remember Bernard Hopkins doing it at the press conference with Tito Trinidad in Puerto Rico, and it's, I'm not saying you need a cultural minister to go down there and figure out what, you know, what goes and what doesn't go. But after the JBL thing in Germany, which, again, that was a little bit blown out of proportion, too. But with that said, there should be guidelines probably set up from WWE as far as here's how not to get cheap heat. Here's how to get cheap heat in this country or this city or this area, and here's how not to do it. It is overblown, and it's, you know, in a way it's kind of funny. And I don't think it was I don't think it was a suspendable offense. But with that said, I mean, Jericho was going out to play with his band soon enough anyway, so I guess it was a way to get out of that, and I guess it was a way for public relations-wise, WWE, to act like they're sending a message, at least when it comes to the country of Brazil, I guess. But, yeah, a little overblown, but I don't think people should be overly dismissive of it, just because you got to know where you're going sometimes.
I actually don't think people should be dismissive at all. There are rules. There are rules wherever you go, and you must follow them. And I think the guidelines should just be, don't mess with flags. You know?
Well, if you go to a Latin American country, don't mess with Jesus, don't mess with the flag. It probably won't go over too well.
Yeah.
And I know it's Portuguese in Brazil, but still, you know what I mean.
And I know, I think the most, it's not really astonishing, I mean, I'm sure that just like in the heat of the moment, Flag ended up in the ring, Punk had it, and Jericho just grabbed it and did his thing. I'm sure he wasn't even thinking about it. But thing is, Chris Jericho's been wrestling for a long time, and he's quite great, and he doesn't need to do things to get cheap heat. He can get heat because he knows what he's doing. That's kind of the thing to me. It's like, if you suck as a heel, if you don't know how to get any heat, and all you can do is call the people fat and stomp on their flag, that's one thing. But when you're a guy who's actually a great heel and doesn't need to use shortcuts, why are you trying to stomp on the flag? You know? Again, I'm sure the flag just ended up in the ring, and actually Lance Storm, I think on his Twitter or it was on his website or something like that, actually made a great point, which was, you know, Jericho shouldn't have done what he did. But at the same time, in order for that flag to have gotten into the ring, that flag probably ended up on the ground. It was probably thrown around by fans. It was thrown over a barricade. It landed on the mat. You know, whoever brought that flag to the building, he said, was the man who originally defaced the flag. And you can argue that, I guess. But in the end, it still ended up stomped on and thrown out of the ring by Chris Jericho. And that's against the rules where he was at. And so he needs to suffer the consequences. That, to me, is it.
Yeah, he needs to suffer the consequences, but, you know, I think that 30-day suspension for it, I think, is a little bit overdone when, realistically, it's, you know, WWE would, in theory, then also be at fault because they didn't have these things, you know, of what to do and what not to do for their, you know, guys going to that country.
Well, I mean, it could have been a deal where Brazil was furious, and I believe Jericho actually leaves for a short tour, I think, this week. So I think it was like, well, you're leaving in 2 weeks anyway. We'll give you this 30-day suspension. You're actually only missing 2 weeks of work and this and that. And we'll make the government happy, and then we can come back, and et cetera, et cetera. So I would guess that was the mindset behind 30 days.
And in that case makes, you know, perfect sense, actually. You know, again, it kind of stinks, though, that he would have to lose even 2 weeks of pay if that's what they're going to do, unless this is just in, you know, PR only. And you know, if the fact that he would be missing out on pay for this, it is kind of crappy.
Now, Randy Orton's suspension, we don't know what he was suspended for. We only know that he was suspended. And all I got to say is, if you're Randy Orton, the fact that he got suspended, you got to really screw up. You got to really do something kind of dumb, you know? I'm not saying they're covering up or anything like that, but he is a big star, And big stars usually get special treatment, and here he is being suspended, his second suspension, which means one more and he would be terminated. So whatever he did, I guess, would have to have been rather blatant.
If John Cena got suspended, would they just shut down the company? If that were to happen, I mean, it's not going to happen. But if it were to happen, they can't stand not being with him for a week. Can you imagine them being out for 30 to 60 days? Or at least 30 days, that would be insanity. But, yeah, whatever Randy Orton did. I tell you, if there's a wrestling god out there, if there's a big K-fabulous being that shines upon all of us, it must really hate Dolph Ziggler. Because it looked, again, like you had said. Yeah, and I'm wondering also when this came down, too, because imagine how Miz feels. If they knew Randy Orton was going to be gone, the fact that he lays Miz out on the way out is... kind of interesting, too, on the way to Miz doing the Marine, too.
Well, I know that the writing team didn't know until it was on the internet, which should have been Tuesday. And the right-hand...
How bizarre is that statement?
Well, not really. They're never told anything.
I know, but it's just, if you just stop and think about that from a business point of view, how absolutely insane that is.
Yeah. So anyway, they didn't know what happened, and I would presume Vince knew, and probably Stephanie and Laurinaitis. So I think they just wanted to get the thing in about we didn't want this guy to be the Marine. So I don't know. I could just be totally misreading this, but this came off as a message to me like, Orton was supposed to be the Marine, Miz wasn't, so we're going to have Orton stun him on the way out or RKO him on the way out, and Miz will go on his merry way. I believe, in fact, he's already gone to shoot it. And, I would presume, Vince could have nixed that segment or had somebody else do it or whatever. But I don't know. It's very odd. It is very strange. That is the departure of... it's not like he stunned somebody that's going to be around. He stunned somebody that's going to be leaving. So, I don't know. It's just weird.
True. And, if there's silver linings in clouds, this is a good opportunity for Sheamus.
Yeah, we'll talk about this more when we come back from the break. We're up against the break here. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of stuff to talk about today. Before the break, Mike was talking about Sheamus and how this is good news for him with the departure of Randy Orton. And Sheamus is a guy that, obviously, if you watch WrestleMania, they have their eye on. And they see him as being potentially a future John Cena-level star. And... I guess we'll see. I think Sheamus is a good babyface. I think that he's a fine worker, but I don't see him as a John Cena-level star at this point. It's going to take a long time to get to that level, but it is going to help that he's going to be the most pushed guy on the show by far with Orton currently out of the picture.
Remember when they had him win King of the Ring, and then they had him run away from Nexus and then buried him, and Triple H came back and just... splattered him all over the place. I swear, they it's almost like they did that whole thing just so, like, later on his DVD set, he'd have something to talk about how he was able to overcome the odds and WWE gives you all the breaks you need. I swear that was the case, because I always know he was one of Triple H's projects and somebody he liked a lot. And, there was no need to do that. And, the fact that he does look different, the fact that he's very comfortable going out there and dealing with the crowd, and he comes across well. Yeah, he's not the greatest thing in the ring, but he's at least a guy that people have taken to. So, again, this is a big opportunity for him to step up in the time that Orton's gone, because, they need stars, but obviously they need another babyface star alongside John Cena to take the role Randy Orton was taking. And it won't be exactly the same, but at least it's someone. So,
Raw this past Monday night did a 2.8 rating, which sent the company into a panic, because of course they've got the 3-hour permanent Raw switch coming up in July, And apparently they don't have enough to keep people interested for 2 hours based on this rating. Now, to be fair, they were going up against a big-time NBA game and Hatfields and McCoys, which Hatfields and McCoys, as far as a scripted television show, did a higher rating than any other show in the history of cable television. I'm not talking like the biggest rating of the month or the biggest rating of the year. If you go back to the beginning of cable television, no show has ever done a bigger rating. Some sports have, obviously, but as far as like a scripted television drama, nothing beat out the Hatfields and McCoys on Monday. So they had some strong competition on Monday. I don't think the 2-8 is anything to panic over. The number sucks, but I expect them to be back around a 3 this week, whatever their current normal is. But it is a concern going to a 3-hour Raw. I think a 3-hour Raw is a horrible idea. I think if they are panicking about a 2-8 now, wait until the 3-hour Raw starts, and they're getting lots of 2.8 hours and perhaps even less. And it's going to be a long summer, and we'll see how it goes. But they are looking to pack that July debut. They've announced the return of DX, which, according to Shawn Michaels, I believe on Twitter, he was unaware of until he saw it online, which is awesome. But they're going all out for that show in July. And it's funny because we've seen companies go all out for shows before. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. But the fact of the matter is, whether it works or not, week two is going to be week two. Meaning the show could do a 10 on week one, which it won't, but it, you know, let's say it does.
Like
week
the XFL.
Two, yeah, week two, it's going to be whatever it's going to be. I don't think packing that first 3-hour Raw is going to make any difference for 3-hour Raws in the future. It's not like, man, if we really pack this 3-hour Raw debut, then the show's going to be doing a 3.5 from that point forward. I don't think that's going to happen, and I think we're going to see a lot of panicking and freaking out over the summer based on the ratings.
Yeah, permanent could only mean, you know, 3 months until the fall stuff starts again in September on USA. Sure, they're not worried about the summer as much, but if that first hour is a continuous drag down and then drags down USA's overall rating when they're in such a, you know, a fight with TBS and FX and other networks like that for bragging rights of being the number one cable network, yeah, I mean, if they start dragging it down, they're not going to be happy. You know, in a lesser extent to FX with The Ultimate Fighter, but kind of the same sort of rules tend to apply when it comes to TV. People freak out when it comes to low ratings, and if they could put a rerun of anything else on, well, come September, that's probably what it's going to be. But, yeah, they can. People have trouble watching it for 2 hours now, and I don't know what you do with that first hour. If you make it more of a, their video packages are fantastic, and maybe that's the way they want to go at first to get people dragged into it. Maybe after the initial first one where they load it up, where they get people going by, or they bait them into watching it that way. And I don't know, but I still think your hardcore fan is then not going to watch it. So they're in a real catch 22 spot here on, again, they haven't been able to fill 2 hours well enough and get people invested in it, and the average fan, not even the hardcore fan, the average fan is turning away from it and poking holes in a lot of the obvious problems that they have. So it'll be interesting to see how this one goes.
What are your thoughts on Raw Monday with the explanation for the Big Show heel turn and him destroying the entire roster?
I think compared to the week before, I thought they did a good job. Now, it's where they, you know, how do they follow this up with anything? But it did. You know, we complained, and a lot of people complained that, you know, they have him out there crying for 5 minutes and nobody comes out to say anything. You know, they're dancing right afterwards. And they did a good job, I think, you know, putting some caulk into those holes up and down the show. I thought they did a good job. You know, they presented Brodus Clay. I kind of liked the fact that he was, you know, strong in saying, you know, well, why don't you say it to my face, and actually paying a big guy character, even though he got ruined at the end. But as far as, you know, Kofi, obviously, you don't want your tag team champions treated that way. You don't. But with that said, what do those belts mean anyway? And they were the ones, you know, supposed to be his friends, as he said, dancing around behind Brodus Clay in the very next segment and not caring whatsoever. So, you know, again, I think they did a good job up and down the night with kind of, you know, filling in some holes and things like that. And obviously they were breaking Dolph Ziggler away from Jack Swagger and some other stuff too. So I thought, especially compared to 2 weeks ago, which I thought was, you know, unbearably horrendous, I thought last week was actually good.
Yeah, the Brodus Clay deal, they keep pushing him as undefeated. 22 wins in a row, I think they're pushing, so I don't know what that's all about. I presume you've got to have a Big Show Brodus Clay match, and Big Show has to end the streak, but I'm probably trying to think too logically about this. I thought the show was better than it has been. It is still not a great show. It is a show that I watch. If it's not appalling, I consider that a win. Raw of late has just been a poor program. And especially this week watching Impact, the live Impact, I thought Impact just absolutely blew Raw out of the water. And a couple of years ago, that would have been like, you know, a rare thing. You had an Impact that was better than Raw. It's like, oh, how about that? Impact was actually better than Raw this week. How shocking. Now, it's like Impact is better than Raw on a consistent basis. And I don't know what that says. Well, I do know what that says. It speaks to Impact improving and Raw continuing its decline. But 3 hours of Raw, I think we need to discuss one last thing about that. They are currently trying to get their storylines more consistent between the shows, meaning what happens on Raw leads to SmackDown, which leads back to Raw, which leads back to SmackDown. So the brand extension is not dead. I mean, internally, if you ask Vince, he'd say, oh, brand extension's in full fact. But if you actually watch the programming, it's pretty clear the brand extension is largely dead. But if you're adding another hour of Raw, I mean, you mentioned Big Show sitting there in the ring crying for 10 straight minutes or whatever. That's going to be 15 straight minutes when you have 3 hours of Raw. If you remember back to that CM Punk sobriety test, the field sobriety test that felt like it went on for years, we're going to have segments like that every single week. Because WWE has two options when they're booking. Either A, you take your average edition of Raw, your average two-hour Raw, and you add 5 minutes to every segment, or you keep Raw the way it is and you add another full hour of programming, which is an hour that would have been on SmackDown. So now you are adding an hour of programming every single week, which is going to speed up every single one of your storylines. So if we're talking about burning through feuds quickly and burning through matches and seeing a match a million times on television and, you know, I don't have any problem with seeing Daniel Bryan versus CM Punk, but we're going to see that match 80 times between now and Raw not being 3 hours anymore due to the lack of talent available and the fact that they've now got five first-run hours, and that's not counting pay-per-views, to fill every single week. So I don't see how this could not be a negative. And realistically, with the exception of, I don't know, maybe even Vince sees this as being a negative, and he's being forced by USA to do this. But, I mean, everybody that I talk to is just appalled at the idea of 3 hours.
Well, yeah, and I mean, now would be a good time to take a Nitro approach, not when they move to 3 hours, but, you know, have Tyson Kidd in a match with, you know, Yoshitatsu, that, you know, one of their good matches that went for 12 minutes on NXT, have that in the first hour, and have, you know, kind of to get more creative. This would be a good time to get more creative, because they obviously need to fill a whole bunch of time. Now, will they? Probably not, because they haven't proved they could do it on the top of the card, so why would they be able to do it on the bottom of it? And again, yeah, this, again, USA obviously is going to be happy about this. They like 3 hour Raws, but overall, and WWE is going to like the fact they're getting more revenue money out of the deal too. You know, that can't be forgotten about either, and that's why Vince is also going to put a positive spin on it. And I'm sure he's already coming up with, if the rating's bad, excuses about it being summertime and people don't watch TV that much during the summer and blah, 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 blah. But overall, I just, you know, if they don't hit a home run in the first month, you know that thing's probably going to be gone as soon as the fall hits.
All right, when we come back, we've got live Impacts to talk about. They're going to be live for the next 11 weeks. It is a summer experiment, and we'll talk about how week one did. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can always head to WrestlingObserver.com for the latest news and information on pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're up there every single solitary day. Radio shows virtually every single day. And in fact, some days as many as 4 shows in one day. If you love this program and you only get to hear it one time per week, or, as was the case because of last week, once every 3 weeks, once every 2 weeks, well, you are missing out. Wrestling Observer Live, daily radio shows. Dave and I are doing another show later on this evening. We'll be taking phone calls on the program, as well as talking all of the news from the weekend. We had another show on Friday. We've got another show tomorrow night after Raw, all of the breaking news. And, of course, all of our other great radio hosts as well up on the website, including Michael here, who is one half of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare with Adam Summers. Check it out. Go to WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page. It's a listing of our latest 3 free radio shows. Download them to your computer or your iPod, iPad, Android, whatever you listen to your audio on, and check them out. And if you like what you hear, keep in mind that not only will you get all of the brand new shows as a subscriber, but if you sign up today for $10.99 per month, and you only need to sign up one time, you can try it out. If you don't like it, you never have to sign up again. But if you enjoy it, you can get on recurring, and you don't even have to worry about paying every month. It'll just come out every single month from your PayPal account or bank account or credit card or whatever you use to sign up. If you sign up for $10.99, not only to get all of these new shows, but every single show that we have ever done, dating back to 2005, is available in the archives right now. There are tens of thousands of hours of audio all at your disposal. You don't have to sign up for anything else. There are no extra fees. $10.99 gets you everything, new and old, plus the newsletters, Figure Four Weekly, Wrestling Observer Newsletter, archives of both newsletters. It is a steal. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. And, Mike, what's coming up on the Big Audio Nightmare in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, we just actually recorded one, which kicked off the Best of the Super Juniors taking place in New Japan right now. We're going to be talking more about that. We'll probably have a show up right before it ends. I believe it's due to end on June 10th. So we'll probably be talking about the lead-in going into the finals there and kind of heating up here. It's been relatively not incredibly quiet in Japan, but relatively quiet with a lot of stuff coming up here in the summer season, including a New Japan, All Japan joint show coming up, as well as some other things. So be talking about all that stuff. Obviously, the Stanley Cup Finals, because we like to throw hockey in there for all of our Canadian friends, and Los Angeles being a nice big market, that helps out things. And probably going to be talking more about Mid-South, too, because we went on a little bit of a rant about that last week, Adam being from down there and me being so influenced by the Mid-South, Bill Watts era of wrestling promotion down there in the 80s. So doing that and reading the new book by Greg Klein about Junkyard Dog and his influence on New Orleans.
From down there, you said.
Yes, down yonder. Adam's from, he used to have a little Cajun accent when he was a little boy down there in the swamps of Louisiana.
Really? I did not know that Adam was from Louisiana. I would not have guessed that.
Cajun.
How about that? All right, everybody, the Thursday night live Impact series, summer series, has begun. They will be going live every single Thursday night for the next 11 weeks. Week one was this past Thursday night. I thought the show was very good. Unfortunately for Impact, the new start time of 8 o'clock p.m. did not catch on with fans yet. And does not surprise me one bit. I know that people have talked a lot about how much promotion, how often they kept mentioning 8 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 8 o'clock. That is true. However, I can tell you from personal experience, when Raw moves an hour earlier, I do this for a living, and I know when Raw is going to be starting an hour earlier. It's not a mystery to me. They can repeat it a million times, but everybody has a schedule for their day. They get up, they go to work, they train, they do whatever they do. Everyone has a schedule for their day. And when the day comes if it's not part of the schedule, you're going to forget the first few times. It's just a fact. And I think a ton of people forgot about Impact starting an hour earlier, and that ended up hurting the rating. Now, with that said, do I honest to God think that live Impacts are going to boost the rating up past what they've been doing now? No. They have done surveys of their fans in the past. They have shown fans live and taped Impacts, complete with the announcers explaining whether or not the show was live or taped. I believe one of the shows, Mike Tenay mentioned something like 11 times during the show that Impact was live. And then later, when they went back and polled the fans and asked them which show was live and which show was taped, 90% of the fans could not tell you which show was live, which, as we've seen a million times with the ratings, shows you that live versus taped doesn't matter. It may matter to you and me, Mike, and people that get spoilers, but to the average fan watching Impact, the average 1.5 million people that watch that show every week, it doesn't matter. And if the only reason for going live is to boost that rating, then I'm afraid by the end of this 12-week experiment, Impact is going to be back being taped again.
Yeah, maybe, because of the cost that goes into it, especially. But I don't think you can judge Impact as far as what they're doing now. When it comes to the rating as much, I think it'll go up to a one at some point. I think, you know, their entire fan base will shift to that, and they'll know it's 8 to 10. I mean, to be honest, I was thinking about it all day. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember it comes on at 8, and it wasn't until I saw a tweet from Chris Park wondering why the Lumberjacks actually look like wrestlers and not like Lumberjacks, which, you know, is a very good question for somebody who's a novice wrestling fan. You know, it wasn't until then, a couple minutes in, before I realized, oh, yeah, duh, it's on. So I fell into that trap, too. But I think you're going to have to judge TNA and what they're doing now by they're not going to get any more fans, at least not right now or not really in the foreseeable future. It's going to be around a 1. It'll be anywhere between a 0.9 and a 1.2. It'll always waver in there. It's whether those people are so enticed by what's going on and so, you know, happy with how the direction of the company and how storylines are going, where they actually buy the pay-per-views. That's where they'll make the money back on any of the travel expenses, because if they can get any people of their fans to buy these pay-per-views and increase that, that's when they'll really be able to see if it plays out and actually takes off or not. To me, it's a good idea. You might as well go ahead and do it. Why not? You know, you're going to have 16 weeks of football coming up. And again, that doesn't affect TNA as much as it would affect WWE, but still, anything to get it going now and driving it home now doesn't hurt.
I wouldn't, I don't know if I would count on pay-per-view numbers going up. And as far as the rating goes, you got to look at it from Spike's perspective. They've got to really boost this number to make this worthwhile. I mean, if the show does a 1 or even a 1-1, it's like, well, we can get a 1 or a 1-1 taping the show. You know, for live, the added expense of live to make a difference, they've got to boost that number. And, you know, as noted, first week, I don't want to say it's necessarily an aberration, but you can probably throw it out after a couple of weeks. Once people start figuring out the new start time, hopefully they figure out the new start time. You know, once that happens, it'll probably settle in around a 1. But again, they could have done a 1 without this switch. And part of me is actually a little bit baffled that they did both at the same time. I mean, you know, why not go live in the old time slot for a while, and then switch to the earlier start time, as opposed to doing both at the same time, and essentially assuring that you're going to lose a lot of money the first week because you're going to see a ratings drop with people not getting the new time slot, and that's on a show that's going live. So I don't know about the idea of doing both together, but they did. It's done. We need to move on now. And as far as pay-per-views go, Dixie Carter did a conference call a couple of weeks ago, and you know the story. The buy rates for the pay-per-views suck. Now, granted, boxing is doing great numbers for big events. I believe the last Mayweather fight did, was it 1.5 million? Is that what it came in at? 1.7, 1.8? What was the final number?
I think they were talking about 1.4, I think.
1.4. So what? Sure, 1.4 million. And, you know, WWE for Mania did 700 and something million in the U.S. And, you know, the UFC event this past weekend probably did a good 550 in the United States. So pay-per-view is not a dying industry unless you don't know how to promote pay-per-views, in which case, of course, it's a dying industry. So that's the issue with TNA. They believe pay-per-view is dying. In reality, they just have been doing a horrible, horrible job making the pay-per-views feel like they are of value to the TNA fans. They've created a generation of TNA fans that don't buy the pay-per-view. So that's the issue with TNA, and they are now, more than ever, attempting to cut down on the number of pay-per-views. For the last couple of years, they have been essentially doing A shows and B shows. Every other month is a big pay-per-view, and then the following month is a small pay-per-view. And these small pay-per-views that they don't really care about, that they kind of, you know, go halfway with, these shows are doing like 7,000, 8,000 buys. And based on the amount of money that it takes to get a pay-per-view on the air, my guess is that they lose money on every B pay-per-view. Lose money! So, if they can eliminate those B shows, and they can just spend 2 months building up pay-per-views, then I think that the remaining six pay-per-views will do a little better than the average right now. And more so, I think they will actually make more money in the sense that they won't be losing money on six pay-per-views a year. So I think moving to six pay-per-views would greatly benefit TNA. I don't even think WWE honestly needs 12 pay-per-views per year, but that's never going to change. No time soon. But TNA moving to six pay-per-views a year would be better for everybody involved.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that. And I think, honestly, when it comes to there was a time where the cable and pay-per-view industry, they would have been absolutely not, no matter how bad they're doing, it's still revenue coming in. But you know, TNA draws so little, and things have changed so much where, you know, to reduce it to six is actually the best thing for everybody involved, and hopefully they can do that. Plus, then doing it that way, it puts more impact, you know, no pun intended, onto the live TV show, where it makes it, you know, should in theory make that more impactful and more interesting and something you need to follow more. So again, yeah, in a perfect world this all happens, but I guess we're gonna have to see.
What did you think of the live Impact this week?
I liked it. I for one, not getting tired of the Chris Park character quite yet.
Joe Park.
No,
you know,
mixing me up with that lost brother of his, Chris Abyss.
Yes.
But, no, actually, I liked it, and, no complaints out of me. It went well. I'm still one of those proponents of people, you know, that probably live to tape I would have been, you know, a little bit better with. But, you know, Brooke Hogan didn't come out and offend or anything like that. It was a little bit of wasteful space. The happy to see of Kazarian and Daniels and AJ Styles in the main event, even though it's, again, a little bit goofy when it comes to the Dixie Carter stuff, but at least, you know, it's keeping me interested right now. And, you know, up and down, the whole thing looked pretty good, and no complaints with anything really other than that Joey Ryan segment.
Oh, the Joey Ryan segment. The gut check. We're coming up against a break, so we'll talk about gut check when we come back and more on that show. But suffice to say, the whole gut check, Joey Ryan, Alex Silva, Ric Flair, who else was involved? Taz. The whole thing is just, it's amazing. I got people in the company going, what do you think about gut check? Because I'm just baffled. And join the club. So we're going to talk about that after the break and tons more. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Right now, we're discussing live impacts and the gut check challenge. And Mike, Alex Silva is standing in front of you in the ring. Thumbs up or thumbs down?
I've seen some Ohio Valley and nothing wrong with the man, but I'm going to go with thumbs down.
Hmm. All right. Alex Silva, thumbs down. Now we've got Joey Ryan standing in front of you in the ring with his porn stash and his sunglasses and his unacceptably hairy chest. Thumbs up or thumbs down?
When you put it like that, absolutely thumbs up.
Well, they voted thumbs down. And in fact, Alex Silva was supposed to be a thumbs down, but Ric Flair went off script and gave him a thumbs up. And because it's TNA, they opted not to retape the segment. That wasn't on a live show. It was taped. So Alex Silva was giving a contract. And as I mentioned to somebody in the company, I was like, you know, fine. The guy wasn't supposed to win. But he won for whatever reason. So shouldn't you use him on TV every week to get over this concept? He won and he vanished. And my other thought is that let's say that Ric Flair had not gone off script. Let's say that everything had gone as planned and Alex Silva had not been hired. So you're telling me that there's a gut check challenge and the plan was for the first two guys to do the gut check challenge to not get a contract with TNA? It seems an odd way to get over this concept. I am not sold on gut check one bit. And when we come back from the break, we're going to get Mike's thoughts on gut check. Not just a segment on Thursday, but the concept in general. And we'll talk about a lot of other news as well. We got so much stuff to talk about today. So come back after the break. Wrestling Observer Live, everybody, here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare here at WrestlingObserver.com. So much news to talk about today in pro wrestling and MMA. We were talking about the TNA Gut Check Challenge before the last hourly break. And Mike, what are your thoughts on the entire concept? Let's forget who has won a contract and who has not won a contract. What is your opinion of gut check?
If it was done more in a older school way, where these guys are maybe getting, you know, they're getting tryout matches, and you can put a spin on it that they need to be able to cut a promo and stuff like that, I think it would be okay. But I think the way they approach it with the, you know, the behind the scenes, you know, well, he's been in the business for 10 years. I don't know. It just comes across as really hokey to me. And when Joey Ryan was going head up with Taz, it's like, well, okay, do we send Taz back down to the minors now? Because I think Joey Ryan got the best of him right there. I mean, I don't know. I think the way that it comes across as showing you behind the scenes and we're making a personnel decision, I don't think it comes across well. And I think, you know, it showed with Joey Ryan. It's actually showed in the last two, where it's just like, I think if it's coming across to me as incredibly awkward and, you know, not making a whole lot of sense, I'm sure I'm not the only one here. If they would just go ahead and do it in the fashion of guy coming up, he's in Ohio Valley, trained by Danny Davis, Al Snow knows him, you know, he works for both companies, and, you know, they tie it in that way, and he gets a tryout match, and, you know, depending on how you have it, maybe he loses and then he cuts a promo, but they all love him for the promo, and it's like you got fire, or just something like that would make, to me, far more sense than the presentation it's got now, if they're going to keep it around.
I kind of like the backstage stuff, but I think that's just because I was a wrestler and I enjoy listening to Ric Flair evaluate talent. But we don't have to worry about that anymore. We'll talk about Ric Flair when we come back from the break. Got a lot of news as well from UFC, WWE, TNA, tons of stuff. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We have a lot of stuff to talk about today, given the fact that we were gone last week. And by we, I mean me. It was all my fault, so I apologize to everybody for that. But we are back here this week. We'll talk about UFC 146 here in a bit. But first off, actually, this ties into UFC 146. So there I was at the show watching the big dudes beat on each other. And who should appear on the big screen but Brock Lesnar? Sitting there by Dana White. And, of course, after the show, somebody asked about Brock, and Dana got a big grin on his face and said something like, he's here, that's all you need to know. And they asked for more details, and Dana wouldn't give them, except to say that he and Brock were meeting after the show. Which got everybody talking, obviously. Brock under WWE contract, scheduled to face Triple H at SummerSlam after losing to John Cena at Extreme Rules. And it is interesting. I don't know exactly what happened in the meeting. The word is it did not go well. Dana was not happy afterwards. But I do know that Brock called Dana to appear at UFC and sit and hang out with him just a few days after word came in that Extreme Rules, which of course was headlined by Brock Lesnar and John Cena, did 147,000 buys in the United States. Now, to put that into perspective, with the exception of December's fight with Alistair Overeem, all of Brock Lesnar's fights in the last few years have done over 1 million buys. The Overeem fight almost did 1 million buys. Brock is a gigantic pay-per-view draw, yet he only did 147,000 buys in the United States with John Cena. And for those that are wondering why I'm only counting United States buys, because I know a lot of people in the... Someone in the UK actually claimed that we were racist because we did not mention the UK buys. I'm not quite sure how that works out, but regardless, we don't mention overseas buys because the UFC buy rates are almost exclusively North America. So to do a fair comparison, we do North America versus North America. So if Brock does 1 million buys for UFC, then it's not fair to add the overseas buys into the WWE number to get a fair comparison. We're doing U.S. to U.S., North America to North America. So we're talking 1 million versus 147,000. Now, on the bright side, for a B show, that's a good number for WWE. That is above Money in the Bank. For those of you that remember Money in the Bank last year when CM Punk was on fire, that showed it about 141,000 buys in North America. Might have actually moved up to 144, 145. But regardless, Brock's match beat that number. And by the time all is said and done, it may hit 150. But it's below what The Rock did for his return at Survivor Series in that tag team match with Miz and R-Truth and John Cena. So anyway, how odd that a couple of days after that 147, he showed up to talk to Dana White. And I don't know what any of this means. Brock is still with WWE. He's still likely going to be wrestling Triple H at SummerSlam. He's still probably going to be having a match at WrestleMania. In fact, this week, everybody's talking about the potential of Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker at WrestleMania. Whatever the match might be, he's still around, but... Mike, a very interesting situation, Brock showing up in UFC.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing in a lot of ways that here we are in 2012 and we have a what's real, what's not, what are you going there to talk about, what's he looking for, what are they, you know, looking for, the whole nine yards. And you got WWE and UFC and Brock Lesnar. It's, if nothing else, it's fun for the speculative purposes and just to see how things go because... Again, with UFC needs, you know, doesn't, you know, Brock, neither company needs Brock Lesnar, quote unquote, but they could both benefit from him incredibly greatly. And yeah, I guess it just all depends on what that conversation was with Dana. But yeah, no mention of him, no mention of Paul Heyman. I don't think if there was a mention of Paul Heyman, it was only very, very quickly this past week on Raw. So yeah, if nothing else, it's interesting. It'll be kind of fun from an outside of, you know, outside point of view to see how it goes.
I can tell
you, by
that...
the way, also with England too, unless your name is Mike Tyson or Ricky Hatton, British don't buy pay-per-views. It's a relatively, you know, new thing over there, and frankly without any draws right now that are incredibly major, it's really a non-issue.
Now I could tell you that this is not an angle. Vince McMahon did not fly Brock Lesnar out to appear at the UFC show. It was not a storyline to get over that the guy is fired. It was nothing like that. This was something that Brock did on his own, unless he was encouraged perhaps by Paul Heyman, who is his kind of real-life business manager. But This is not part of a storyline. This was an actual business meeting with Brock, and I don't know what he wanted, but he wanted something, and whatever he wanted, Dana wasn't happy with it. So I guess we'll find out more in the upcoming days. Maybe the next big UFC event, and Dana will talk about it when asked, and we'll get more on the story. But according to Dana, a couple days before the show, Brock just texted and said, "You know, can I meet with you? And don't tell anybody." And met with him, and it was a surprise. So there you go. Very interesting situation right there. What are your thoughts on 147 for Extreme Rules?
I no one should be surprised. I mean, yeah, the fact that, yeah, it was a little less than Rock, okay, that actually makes sense to me. The fact that nobody really cared outside of who's buying WWE pay-per-views anyway doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, that's just where they're at. You know, it's going to take a long time to rebuild. It's going to be hard to shot, you know, hot shot these things back into really doing something. Because if they couldn't do it with Punk, with the Money in the Bank, they couldn't do it with Rock at SummerSlam, you know, and now with Lesnar at this one, you know, it's just going to be time before they get people invested back into wanting to spend $60 on a pay-per-view.
What would you expect SummerSlam to do with Lesnar and Triple H? Let's say the show did about 200,000 U.S. last year, which I think actually is high. I think it was about 190, but 197. Anyway, what would you expect it to do?
You know what? That what I could actually see doing really well, being in L.A. and Orton. People know Orton could be coming back around that time. I think you could actually do, because it's Triple H and because it's Lesnar, and then, you know, I'm sure there'll be a lot of care taken. Yeah, I could see that actually spiking up 50,000 buys. I honestly could. Now, again, that's great, even if they did
so
that.
So 245 in the U.S., I just want to make sure that we got that number correct.
What?
245,000 in the U.S. for SummerSlam.
Okay, I say, okay, in theory, it could go that high. I don't think it will, but in theory, okay, say it does. It doesn't matter, because as great as that is, what do they do the month after? And that's the bigger thing. Because, I mean, if you think about it, by
Hold on. If they're not going to do anything the month after no matter what, so actually a 245 would be great for them.
But if people then don't buy anything again till the Royal Rumble and they're all sucking wind and the numbers continue to drop for those rest of those shows throughout the year, no, it's not.
Well,
unless you made all of your money back, if they did enough money to make all of the money back for Brock Lesnar, then yeah, it's okay.
Here's what I'm saying. I'm saying that the chances of September, October, November, and December doing poor are about 95%. Whether SummerSlam does well or not, I think those shows are not going to do well. So, you may as well get 245,000 buys for SummerSlam followed by four bad shows, then 190,000 buys for SummerSlam followed by four bad shows. So I think it does matter.
If they lose 5,000 down the line for those four shows, did they do 200? If it was 200,000 last year, do they do 220? That's really going out on a limb. For them to do 240, I mean, yeah, in theory they could, but they'll have to put everything they can behind this thing and crank Triple H and Lesnar up hard and strong, and can you do that and then have enough time with the dates in Lesnar's contract to use that after him? Don't know that either.
I think the show will do... It's very early here. But I think if it did 197 last year, I would say 240. 15. I don't think it's going to go any higher than that.
I won't disagree with that. That's incredibly safe.
Yeah, I think that'd be a safe bet for that number. We're going to talk more about SummerSlam and WWE after the break. Plus, we got to get into UFC 146 and a bunch of other news. So that's coming up after the break, everybody. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We have a lot of news to get into today, not the least of which is a recap of some of the highlights from UFC 146, which Brock Lesnar appeared at. We've been talking about SummerSlam as well, how Triple H and Brock Lesnar might do on that show. And Mike, have you fathomed the fact that most likely The show in Brazil, the UFC show in Brazil coming up, that was originally going to be Vitor Belfort and Vanderlei Silva, which is now going to be Vanderlei Silva versus Rich Franklin because Belfort broke his hand. Do you realize that that show, which is probably going to be the least purchased pay-per-view of the modern era, is probably going to still draw more buys than Brock Lesnar's WWE match with John Cena? Do you realize that the Jose Aldo pay-per-view coming up is going to draw more buys than Brock Lesnar and John Cena?
Yeah. As well they should. I mean, there's one thing about, I mean, yes, UFC's got, you know, whether they have to run pay-per-views or not, you know, it can be up for debate, but they are running these pay-per-views, and it's like when boxing fans, they look at a Mayweather pay-per-view and go, see, all those UFC fans that think boxing's dead, look at this number. The thing is, it's the only number. Now, Pacquiao's going to draw some with Timothy Bradley, and, you know, there'll be other fights. Guys like Cotto can draw 100,000 on their own. But, you know, realistically, boxing's not in good shape just because Floyd Mayweather can make himself a lot of money. It's not exactly how it works here. And you know, the same said with WWE. Even, you know, it's just the 12 pay-per-views they have and the lack of effort and time they put into them, I mean, it's really bad. Vince can say that he's not in competition, of course, with the UFC or with boxing. They deal with real people, and the other places deal with sports fans. But, you know, with the way the rating is eroding and the way the pay-per-views have been, again, great, even if they do something with Brock Lesnar here for this next pay-per-view, and they should. I mean, for God's sakes, it's Brock Lesnar and Triple H. They should be able to do something with it. You know, will that make up for the rest of the year? Will that make up for, you know, a good one at the Royal Rumble and then going into malaise again? They do this cycle every single year, and they seem to have a summer blockbuster like Nexus, like Vince blowing up, what was the thing last year? I can't even remember it now, but all that sort of stuff. They seem to have this, or Punk, they seem to try to do a summer blockbuster thing that they get they fall into, they get a hot shot on in a good start, and then they end up blowing it by the end, and this thing happens year after year after year. And, you know, it's not rebuilding any faith in the people that are going to want to go out there and spend $60 a month for their pay-per-views.
Here's another fun fact. Jose Aldo is going to outdraw Brock Lesnar versus John Cena. However, John Cena versus The Rock is actually going to end up drawing more buys in North America than the UFC all-heavyweight show with Junior Dos Santos defending against Frank Mir and Cain Velasquez versus Bigfoot Silva. How about that?
Unfair.
Unfair, you say?
Yes.
Why is that unfair?
One was WrestleMania.
Well, the point I'm trying to make is there are certain shows that are still big shows. And as people have argued, that's the show to put your money match on, is the big show. Not Extreme Rules. Put it on SummerSlam that people still buy. Put it on Royal Rumble that people still buy. I know people are going to argue, but Brian, there's a reason that nobody buys the B shows, because there are never any big matches on those shows. Well, guess what? They just put a big match on a B show, and it didn't mean anything. And if you think that Brock Lesnar and John Cena on a B show is going to rehabilitate all the other B shows, think again. It's not going to happen. Brock Lesnar, in order to justify his $5 million paycheck, Brock Lesnar alone, in Brock Lesnar's matches, needs to generate 277,000 buys in North America. That's a lot. And if Brock is only going to work a few shows per year, let's say that Brock is going to work three shows over the term of his contract. Extreme Rules, SummerSlam, and WrestleMania. That means he needs to add 92,000 buys per event. Well, guess what? He didn't add 92,000 buys to Extreme Rules. He added probably 40. So we had to add another 50 to that. So he needs to add 92,000 plus 50,000. He needs to add 142,000 North American buys to his next show to catch up. Okay, that ain't going to happen on a B show. It probably isn't going to happen at SummerSlam. Your best shot is WrestleMania. And if we add the, what did I say, 50,000 buys? So we need to add another 50,000 to WrestleMania. Will Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker add 200,000 buys to WrestleMania? I don't know. But that's the only show all year where Brock Lesnar might be able to add 200,000 buys to a show.
Yeah, yeah, that many, absolutely. Can he do that? I mean, can he add exponentially more? Yes, but I don't know how many dates he has, but you could plan this out where if you have him at Extreme Rules, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, you in theory could actually make it back up if you take the momentum you get from, okay, you have momentum with him, and you take that momentum with him and you don't screw it up, and you have these accessory pieces like maybe Dolph Ziggler in a feud with somebody, or say Punk and Daniel was going on at that time, it wasn't going on at this time and they had saved it, and it, you know, that type of stuff where, yes, because then people are getting into the whole package again, and the TV would be better, and you are invested into this, even though Brock's not there every week. Every time he's not, Paulie is there. So there's ways to actually make that work and make your money back off of him strategically at those pay-per-views, but again, you're going to have to do it very carefully and right, and unfortunately, what have they done that with? The fact that they started out beating Brock with John Cena, that was not good. I think, again, I know you kind of poo-pooed the thought that there was no way that Triple H lays down for Lesnar. To me, it's the perfect time for him to lay down for Lesnar, and I think there's no doubt that
I didn't say there was no way. I just said that if Brock would have beaten Cena, then I would have said, well, there's no way that Hunter's beaten Brock. But now that Brock has beaten John Cena, I think there's a perfectly good chance that Hunter is going to beat Brock as well.
Well, he should. There shouldn't be any other way to it anyway. Now, I'm not saying that there couldn't be, obviously. Triple H just goes over. But, you know, it doesn't make any sense in any possible aspect that he doesn't. And again, because why does Triple H need it? And you have Brock Lesnar in theory. And again, he's not quitting or going anywhere for real, even though the fact that can continue to be floated up in the air is fun, especially for the average fan who maybe isn't, you know, as aware and doesn't know. But look, he's not going anywhere. He's going to be around. He's not going to breach his contract. He's not going back to fight in the UFC. I mean, WWE is going to get their worth out of him. So, well, at least the time out of him. Now, whether they get the worth out of him or not, I guess we'll see.
What'd you think of UFC 146, all heavyweight action?
It was a good show. I think that this and the Ultimate Fighter finale were good shows. It's, you can't go wrong. I mean, you know, it's, people still love watching big dudes smash each other, you know, another big dude in the head. So why heavyweight boxing, you know, or why boxing in America truly won't come back until there's some heavyweights that you can get behind, because they do make for fun shows. You know somebody's going to get knocked out. The odds of that happening are high, so there's always an excitement level. And again, even if it's not guys who, you know, at the top of your list or maybe your favorite people, the chance of something, you know, quick happening and shocking happening go up real high. And again, it was a good show. It was not I'm not sure how it's going to do pay-per-view-wise or anything like that, but I think it probably will do better than people think, just because I think there's more people out there than are given credit for liking those types of shows where, you know, it may not be the most technically sound event, but it's going to be dudes getting knocked out.
Let's say the show does 550,000 buys, which I think would be a safe number. How many buys do you think Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos 2 for the title is going to do after this show?
800. If they use FX right, if they use Fox right, if they go back, because it would probably be around football season when they do that, they utilize Fox again. Because, again, that stuff paid off when you weren't getting a 1 o'clock game in your area and you weren't getting a Sunday doubleheader when it came to Fox football. They were putting those, you know, shows on about Dos Santos, and it seemed to work. But, yeah, about Velasquez, and it seemed to work out, you know, incredibly well. Be able to utilize that, and I think if they do all of those things and get the stories out there about, you know, how good these guys are, what a nice guy Junior is, but he's, you know, killer, all that sort of stuff, You market the thing right. I think there's no reason he can't do 750 to 800,000 buys.
Now, the tough finale, for those of you that have not been watching Ultimate Fighter, the finale was, no joke, the best feel-good story in the history of Ultimate Fighter. Michael Chiesa, who actually is from my neck of the woods, well, he's from my state, Spokane Valley, Washington. He is on the show, and he gets word virtually immediately that his father has passed away. And Dana White allows him to go home very, very quickly to attend the funeral and come back. And his father, the last words he said that his father said to him were, "You need to get on that plane." His dad was pushing him to go, 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 go. Don't worry about me. Go. Do the show. Become a star. Win this contest. So he goes, and with perhaps one exception, I know for sure his last two fights, Michael Chiesa was the underdog. And he went in there, he took some beatings, and he managed to make it to the semifinals, and then he managed to make it to the finals against Al Iaquinta, who was roundly favored as the overall winner of the season. And he ended up going in there, taking the back, rear naked choke, and winning the contest. And we're going to talk more about this after the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 20 minutes. Pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, and of course for the latest news in pro wrestling and MMA, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. That's our website. Daily news updates, audio shows. If you love this radio show, you are missing out. We do shows every single day up at WrestlingObserver.com. We talk all of the news, wrestling, mixed martial arts. We interview the biggest stars. We take your phone calls. All of this every single day. Some days as many as four shows in a single day. Later on tonight, Dave Meltzer and I are going to be back. Special call-in show, talking the news as well. Back tomorrow night after Raw. We were up on Friday night after the Ultimate Fighter finale. We're always up talking all of the latest news. A subscription, $10.99 per month. Less than you would pay for Sirius Satellite Radio, in fact. And I am a subscriber to Sirius Satellite Radio, so I encourage you to sign up for that as well. But WrestlingObserver.com, boy oh boy, if you like wrestling and MMA news, this is the place for you. Not only do you get all the brand new shows we do, but if you signed up today, again, $10.99 at WrestlingObserver.com, you can get every single show we've ever done. So if you've got a long commute, if you like to listen to stuff at work, if you like to listen to stuff when you work out, you will never run out of audio. I mean, you will never run out of audio. There are tens of thousands of hours of audio up on the site, including interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling and MMA. Guys like Bruno Sammartino and Ric Flair and Stone Cold Steve Austin. Huge interviews up in the archives right now. Head up there and do a search. Check out and see what we've got. If you want a sample, scroll down the right-hand side of the page at WrestlingObserver.com. We have a listing of our latest three free radio shows. They're MP3s. There's nothing to pay for. There are no pop-ups, nothing. Just download them, listen to them, and if you like what you hear, there's tens of thousands of hours waiting for you as a subscriber to WrestlingObserver.com. If you love this show, I guarantee you will love a subscription. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking about the Ultimate Fighter live finale, Michael Chiesa's win. He is the new Ultimate Fighter. Storybook fairy tale ending, as they say. And, Mike, what did you think of the finish of the show and the, Ultimate Fighter this season as a whole?
Yeah, no, I'm a little biased here because I'm not a big Ultimate Fighter fan as it is. I'm not a big reality show person, and the show has lost me. I mean, we're up to, what, God, this is 15 now. I can't even tell you who the winners were anymore. I'd have to really labor to try to remember, you know, who was on who and all that sort of stuff. With that said, I was a proponent of the show going live, and when it does come up with a story like this that, you know, you just can't make up, and how sad that story was, and, you know, in a way, thank God he did win the thing because he had to air all of his suffering, you know, on the air and never really got a chance to grieve. It was such a whirlwind thing going back home for him to come out and win this thing and being such an underdog and being so unique looking and taking the pounding that he did. And, you know, people love that. You know, it was the whole thing with Bonner and Griff, and they just killed each other, which is what really put it over the top with, people watching for the first time or being young in their, MMA viewing careers and seeing that and watching that abuse and just falling in love with it. He was the perfect guy to win this season, and it was a great story. And that said, even though I am a fan of keeping it live, I think it's a good gimmick to have. They need to figure out, in case there's injuries, what are the backup plans going to be that don't disappoint people. It's hard enough trying to have guys and schedule them on shows with the amount of injuries that take place with all of these shows. But, what are they going to do in case there's a nasty injury to one of the finalists that take place in the semifinals or both? Does it turn into a Strikeforce type of situation? Do you get somebody from Strikeforce? I mean, those things I think need to be ironed out a little bit better. And I also think the show probably needs to be linked to another FX show that does well. I'm not saying an Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but a show that, if you look at demographically, can cross over to a Ultimate Fighter fan and who they're aiming for, because I think on its own, it's tough. I think it needs, just like it was sitting behind Impact for all that time and it drew those people, I think it could probably do itself a favor by being linked into another Fox show or another FX show, and probably on a different night. Friday night was not the night for me, I don't think. Thursday, works out a little bit better. But again, I don't know exactly what FX's schedule is and if they have something powerful on Thursday or not.
Needs to move back to Wednesday.
Wednesday would be, yeah, and again, I don't know what's on there, but that would be a perfect scenario, that it comes on, after the debut of Something Good at 9, or, an hour-long show at 9, and it comes on at 10 o'clock. I don't think that's a bad idea. And if you want to have the absolute final fight on a Friday or something like that, I would even be for that if you can, figure out a way to pull it off where there's a lot of good promotion in the whole nine yards. But definitely, as far as the series runs, I think definitely that's a great idea.
I remember when Chiesa was going to the ring, and I was thinking, it's amazing how much wrestling screws stuff up nowadays, in the sense that, you have full control over who beats who. So you can create a storyline in wrestling, and then you can book a finish that works, that makes the whole thing pay off. And here we are, poor Michael Chiesa walking to the cage, and I was just thinking, man, it's too bad this dude's going to get destroyed by Ally Quinta. It's too bad. It'd be such a great story if he won. That's what I'm thinking as this is going to the ring. Because I thought for sure that Chiesa was losing this fight. And goes to the ring, and sure enough, rear naked choke. And I was like, what's even more amazing is if this was pro wrestling, they probably would have still had Ally Quinta win. It's just, that's what they do nowadays. Because they don't know what they're doing anymore. But anyway, you mentioned injuries and the live aspect of it. I can tell you for a fact that when they announced that Ultimate Fighter was going live, it was not immediately apparent to anybody that that means that the guys that go to the finals are not going to have 2 months off to train. They're going to have to fight their way into the finals and then fight a week later. And Ally Quinta was fighting 3 fights in 3 weeks. Realistically, if this were not a live season, there's a decent chance that, in fact, Ally Quinta would have won. But the way that things worked out with him fighting 3 times in 3 weeks, he got beat by Michael Chiesa, which was for the better, storyline-wise. I mean, there's nothing about Ally Quinta. You can't go like, he's got more star potential, he's got more charisma, nothing like that. Chiesa had all of that, and Chiesa won. But anyway, the point is, they were planning to have everybody that appeared on Ultimate Fighter this season get a fight on the finale. But at least one of those fights ended up having to be pulled because of injury. Because a guy got hurt doing the live show and they were unable to do the finale. Now, for those of you that watched the season, Michael Chiesa in his semifinal fight, that dude took a beating. And the commission could have very easily said, you're suspended for 4 weeks, no contact. At which point, he would have been out of the finale. So, this season of Ultimate Fighter would have lost the coach's fight, since Dominick Cruz had to pull out due to a knee injury, and they would have lost their finale, all because the show went live. And as I've noted a million times in the Impact rating shows and the Raw rating and the entire season of Ultimate Fighter 15, Live versus tape doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in the ratings. And particularly, it's one thing if, for example, on Impact, we get the spoilers on Tuesday or Monday, and we know what's going to happen sometimes a week and a half in advance. But if you look at the numbers, you know, the vast majority of fans, they don't read the spoilers, they don't know what's going to happen, it's live to them. And that's the key. Ultimate Fighter is very exciting for Dana White because he's there every week seeing live fights. But you know what? In previous seasons of Ultimate Fighter, the fighters had a $5 million fine floating over their head. $5 million! If you spoil the results of Ultimate Fighter as a fighter, you're going to get a $5 million penalty. So nobody spilled the beans. So, for me and Mike and you, the listener, the show may as well have been live. I didn't know who was going to win every single week. It may as well have been live. Not to mention the fact that you can build storylines over the season, and you don't have to worry about the guys going to the finale getting hurt, because if they do get hurt, they've got 2 months to recover and be ready for the final. So I think they need to go back to a tape format, and I think it needs to be on Wednesday nights.
Again, in putting it that way, again, it's hard to disagree with that. I'm willing for them to give it one more shot, though. I mean, it started off so badly. It didn't feel like an FX show. It just, I don't know what it felt like. And the fact that they, you know, they weren't saying anything, and they had too many fights that very first night where they had the fights to get into the house, and they were barely talking to each other, and there was no dynamic, and it was just, you know, it was a little bit painful. So, again, it's not my money, and I actually will take a live fight over a tape fight any day, even though it doesn't matter. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. You know, I'd like to see them give it another shot again. I think more than that, you know, have it live on a Wednesday. Or have it, again, maybe you don't even have to go back to tape to the level that they did it. You know, have it only 2 weeks behind instead of, I don't know, what was it before? Like, you know, up to, what, 6 weeks behind?
I think it was 6 weeks. I can't remember exactly how long it was.
So if you cut it to two, maybe it's even 3 weeks, you know, I think that would help out with...
Well,
you
if
know,
you're going to cut 3 weeks, you may as well just tape the whole season 6 weeks in advance.
I don't know. Well, you know what? I guess that's true, because if you are knocked out or knocked silly, I guess the odds that a commission, you know, the commission is going to suspend you for 30 days is there. So, again, like, you know, if it was going to be 30 days, like you were saying, I guess it might as well be 6 weeks or you know, to whatever they had as before.
I want to make sure we give you a chance to talk about the, well, we've talked a little bit about it before, but any other thoughts on the Super Juniors tournament in New Japan?
You know, I'm actually surprised to see the CMLL's Angel De Oro, and, you know, they've used in New Japan. There's been guys in the Super Juniors before, Mystico and Volador and La Sombra, but I was kind of surprised, and Angel is actually leading one of the blocks alongside Prince Devitt in Block A, and the other block, Loki, who is the current New Japan IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion, is leading that one with 10 points, and he's pretty much the runaway winner with it right now. There's a three-way tie for second place there. There's about four more shows to go before they get to the final at Currican Hall on June 10th. Both Adam and I were in agreement after seeing the first night and seeing the first 3 days of results when we recorded our last show, that it looks like it's probably going to be Loki and Raisuke Taguchi again. Again, Prince Devitt doesn't need it. He's arguably one of the best wrestlers in the world. And guys like Alex Kozlov and Pac and some other guys who are in there, even though it's fun to watch them, they don't look to be in the plans. And Loki and Taguchi, it looks to be a pretty good feud that they could bank on rolling into summer. And again, it frees up Devitt to do some more stuff in the heavyweight division if they so choose. And I kind of hope that's the case, seeing him in this year's G1 tournament.
TMZ had a story about John Cena's divorce. And they claimed that John Cena had a lien on his house for not paying like $116,000 or something to a contractor. I can't remember all of the details, but the point is They seem to indicate that this payment owed was putting John Cena in the poorhouse, and that this was a result of this all resulted in his marriage falling apart. This seems preposterous.
Yeah.
This is the same TMZ that reported that he made $18 million or was worth $18 million. Now a $107,000 lien or whatever is putting him in the poorhouse?
That sounds like if it came from anybody, the Cena camp would have floated that out there for some sympathy. That seems to be ridiculous.
We're going to follow this up after the break, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, and I have got the TMZ article in front of me. This man, actually, this is an old story. It's claiming $15,000 that John Cena reportedly stiffed a roofing company on. That's the one from a while ago. Here's a new one. Why his marriage fell apart. This one here says that he owes a contractor. One of the contractors filed a lien on the house for $110,000. And it says, fun fact, remodels are one of the main triggers that causes marriages to fail, it says. Trust me, everybody. This is not the reason John Cena's marriage fails. I talked to people in the company that said, if this gets ugly, it's going to get ugly. And that was not in reference to a lien on John Cena's house for $110,000 of contracting work. I don't know if anything is ever going to come out on this, but I did find that story funny, that his marriage is falling apart due to a remodel. That's nice.
Well, I wonder who floated that out there. I think maybe something was lost in translation or something like that. I mean, because there are lots of rich people and well-to-do people in the last 5 years who... This has happened plenty of times. Sometimes this just stems from, you know, people forgetting him, not being around, and always on the road. There's lots of different reasons that this could be happening. If he does have a lien on his house from somebody, you know, a contractor who remodeled for him now, where I think maybe something got lost in translation. Maybe there was something about a model or something like that, and maybe some things got taken, you know, out of context, or possibly maybe. I don't know.
I'm just reading this. It says, we've already told you, Cena has blamed the divorce on the remodel, claiming it caused unbearable strife between him and his wife. Where does that come from? I've never heard
don't
that story.
Know. I wonder what that remodel's name was.
Oh, Mike. That's not the case.
Kidding.
All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up here today, but we'll be back next week with a brand new show. Make sure you check out WrestlingObserver.com for all the latest news in pro wrestling and MMA. And it's a good time, everybody. WrestlingObserver.com. Thanks, Mike, and thanks, everybody, for listening. Talk to you again next week, Wrestling Observer Live, here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.